That is nice.
You made that mug?
That's my color palette.
This is one of the mugs I made, yeah. And my teacher's he's very, like, whatever happens, happens when it comes to glazes. So he's influenced me a little bit. Whereas, like, if I was set alone, I would make things more precise. But I'm actually glad that he forces me to be sloppy-doppy with stuff like that.
I want one of those.
That's another topic, too, is allowing yourself to not be so precise.
Yeah. No, working with David, he's really making me throw the clay around and have fun. And he keeps saying, you can texture. I'm like, I don't want to texture it. No, just grab it and scrape the sides. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But I've done it.
Okay. I'll write that down. But I'm already recording, so everybody knows that we're going to talk about that at some point.
Oh, my goodness. I don't have my radio voice on. Sorry.
No. I do want one of those mugs. So,
And then I whipped up 6 the other day, which you'll see if you're on my Patreon, and I showed the progression. So I did 6 within about a half hour. I just piled up 6 lumps of clay, all the same size, and I showed my progression. Hmm. And by the end, I was getting taller, thinner walls. The beginning, it looks like something that was like carved out of stone because I'm like so nervous to bring it up and make it more dainty. But it was a real nice project. It was a nice exercise for me, and I'm going to do that more often. Where I'm just going to take 5 or 6 lumps and look at them in progression. So,
awesome.
And they all look like this. That's the reason I brought that up. Is they all have like a slight taper.
Oh yeah. Cool. Well.
Yep.
What's going on?
I just got back from Pittsburgh. You guys might have seen that. I was in Pittsburgh for Carolina Shoes. They're opening up their own special spot inside of a place called Frank's Shoes. So they have the downstairs, they have their own section, and it's the first thing for them to do that. And Frank's Shoes is a big retailer in Pittsburgh. A lot of people know Frank's Shoes. And so we went there. There was a little hootenanny. There was live music, and I printed posters. I made the scissors to cut the ribbon. And then we ended up having a fan hangout, which I got to meet some of the fans. I got to meet Craig. Craig, thank you for always supporting what we do here. It was
Craig
really
is
nice.
Amazing. Let's just throw that out there. Craig sends us the most wonderful messages all the time.
So makes Craig, me thank feel you for that.
Very nice. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you,
Craig.
Yep. It was awesome. And I'm glad you came as a first maker meetup, and you said you weren't disappointed, which is very nice to hear. And a bunch of other guys came out, a lot of the usual suspects, and drove home. And because I've been going every weekend, I got home and I immediately went to work in the workshop. We all got home. I was with Derek and Paul. We drove together, and then they left from here to go back towards New England. And I went right into the shop and I started working on my go-kart. So I've been slowly piecing together the go-kart. The patrons see it. And I'm making a go-kart for the go-kart event, July 11th. And I've given myself enough time to really try and do some careful engineering and welding. I got Matt from Sparks is coming next week. We're going to put the electric motor in, Sparks Motorcycles in Connecticut. And we're going to put the motor in. I'm leaving the frame vague because I don't know exactly where and how the motor and the battery are going to go. But I have plenty of room to be able to install all that stuff. And I got this event coming up this weekend at Rhinebeck Aerodrome. I'm going to be doing like a little bit of bandsaw work, and I'm going to display my leather. Rachel's going to man the table with leather. And then the following weekend, I got something in Rotterdam, New York, where I'm involved in some fashion show. I still don't quite understand it, but go find out with me what this fashion show is about. My name is on the card. The Rotterdam Fashion Show at Preserving History. Preserving History? I think that's the name of it. Anyway, look at my socials. You'll see it. This isn't a commercial, but I'm just telling you what I'm trying to catch up with. So all these things. So I've been making a lot of leather bags. Last night I started a seat. The aerodrome needs a leather-covered seat for one of the airplanes. It's a two-seater, so I got to make one, get it approved, make the second one. And yeah, just been jamming and working and working and working. And I kicked off the dust at the graveyard house, and I'm replacing the last section of flooring. Hopefully the drawings will come in soon for the architect so we can go over them and then decide what changes need to be made. But yeah, I was at the graveyard house most of the day yesterday. It was nice to get back in there and get the blood flow going over there. And it was good. Good.
So that's a lot of travel. I mean, like, you didn't travel a whole lot for a while.
Yeah.
And
yeah. The winter
like you are
we did nothing.
Every week now.
Every weekend. So this weekend after the aerodrome's only obviously 30, 40 miles from me, but I'm not leaving the States. And then the following weekend, I'm not leaving the States. And then the following weekend, I'm not leaving the state. And I've driven like maybe 6,000 to 7,000 miles since the spring. Went to Texas, went to Pittsburgh, went to Alabama. Papa Chad was at the event too. Got to hang out with Papa Chad. We had a really, really, really last few weeks have been a lot of fun, but it's nice to be able to relax. So that's it. Oh, and then this weekend's video is going to be a CNC video of somehow, some way. One CNC video a month. This month.
That's hilarious to me. So today's Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. And that would be this weekend. That would drive me crazy.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't even know how I would pull that off.
My Thursdays are usually pretty packed full of the big push for the weekend of the video. I have two opposing concepts. I might either make a toolbox using Maker Case, or I might make an emblem for the Cadillac out of aluminum. So I'm not sure. I'll eventually do both of those, but I'm not sure which one's going to come first. So
one of my favorite things about you is you just allow yourself to do whatever. You don't, as far as like other makers, you have less barriers than others. You will just dive into something that maybe you don't know how to do, and you'll just figure it out on the way. Or you're like, yeah, I'm going to put out a video this weekend. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to. And you just do it.
Those have always been the most successful ones where I don't put too much planning into it.
Yeah.
When I like this go-kart video, it's going to be endless hours of welding and grinding. I'm leaving so much off the camera because it's just so monotonous. It's going to get 90,000 views after like 6 months. It's like, I hope not, but that's what's going to happen. I'm like, oh, another go-kart video, mix it out of metal. Okay. You know, I don't know. We'll see.
Well,
it's all about that thumbnail.
Something David just said, that got me thinking. Jimmy, is there a skill that you have not tried that you want to try?
Well, you know, now that
I know you can get better at some. That's not what I mean. Is there something like you've never actually tried that you want to do?
I'm still a little envious of you with the electronics, with the Arduinos and the Raspberry Pis and that type of stuff. I still have not found a reason to need it. And eventually there'll be a moment where I need to need it. And that's when I play with it in the very beginning when we were all going to Maker Faire. And I bought a little Arduino kit and I play with it. And I was able to like make the blinking lights and stuff. But there'll be a moment in time where I really need that and I'll enlist somebody to help me and then I'll learn it. But I realize I'm really attracted to the practical arts. The practical arts like blacksmithing and clay, like those you really can like dig in, get your hands dirty. Leather, blacksmithing, clay, which is really my latest passion. And woodwork. I got a message the other day on one of my videos. It's like, when are you going to get back to woodworking? I'm like, I do woodworking all the time, don't I? And I'm like, not really. I guess I stuff doing metal. Yeah. A lot of times I'm doing metal. But I have a project coming up. And it's on my list. This is why you keep seeing me look this way. I'm just looking at my list of potential projects. This will be a longer than a week, than a few days to build. My cousin, his wife, her father owned a carnival somewhere in the Midwest. And the elements of the carnival got sold off and the only thing left is this crane. And it's a little this is like carnival from like the 50s and 60s, a little mechanical crane where you use these levers and it picks up a plush animal and you drop it. And it's all small scale. So like you pick up like an egg that we just see inside of like a dime machine. And all they have left is this metal handmade crane that either the father made or like somebody he hired made. And it's a little metal crane that has these levers and stuff. And they want me to make a new case for it because it was part of a big display that got thrown away. So they just kept the elements. And so I'm going to make a 1950s looking, 1940s looking crane encasement with four glass sides and the mechanism underneath the crank and you put a coin in it and stuff. So that's a video I have coming up, which will involve a lot of woodworking because I see it in walnut trying to make it look old. So it's sitting on my porch. Every time I walk by it, I go, I have to get started on it. I got to get started. So, yeah. So I do have a woodworking project coming up. But if there's anything, I can think of electronics. I mean, I've done sheet metal now. I mean, sheet metal is a whole new discipline that I really would like to get into, but it requires a lot of tools and what probably won't be able to get right away But just the regular hammer and shot bag and working on a tree stump, that's how I'm going to incorporate some sheet metal forming into the go-kart. This is going to get an aluminum skin, and on the aluminum skin, I'm going to kind of brush the aluminum, and then I'm going to paint bright colors for Carolina sponsored. And so it'll be like a 1930s sports car, race car with a Carolina branding on it.
Hmm. Cool.
I see leather straps holding the engine cover down, even though it's going to be an electric motor under my ass. Don't tell anybody. It's going to have louvers. It's going to have like a phony exhaust. I'm going to put a a baseball card in one of the spokes. So when I drive fast, it's going to sound like the motor's going. I might put it in all four.
Otherwise, it'll be like, completely silent.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to put it in all four spokes. It's going to have, it sound like four cylinders going.
But that's cool.
That's it.
Awesome. Well, David, what have you been up to?
I've got the video. There's a video coming out tomorrow that I shot like 6 weeks ago. So I am so disconnected from it. it's a CNC that doesn't have a table. It like attaches through belts to the corner. Like you can make your table any size that you want and you attach the belts to the corner and it does the thing. It's a Kickstarter that's coming out.
Does it hang from both corners and goes up?
It doesn't
down?
Hang. It works. I don't know that the belts are strong enough to hang. But this one just works on a table, so upright. And I've seen the ones that hang before and you have to have like a counterweight and everything. But, this one it's pretty cool. And basically you can make it any size that you want and you just choose the platform and then you can just put it away when you're done. So I got a video coming out on that tomorrow and it's a little worrisome because my previous video was also a product video and I got like two comments like, this dude makes product videos now. And even though the previous video I was showing off this UV printer, which is super cool that I can print directly on wood now, I still made a project. I still made two projects. Yeah. And it was no different than any video that I've ever made. I just happened to use a new product. And you could have done these things without this product. There's always
just delete those two comments and everything.
It is. And of course, those comments are the minority. I get that. I understand that. But when you go into these videos and you have that little bit of fear that it's going to somehow offend somebody and then you're reinforced with those comments. So yeah. This is another product video, but I do make projects in it. I think I do some pretty creative stuff in both of these videos. So, that's coming out, but the next project video that is not sponsored by a tool. It's this big piece of art. I've had this maple slab in my closet for a long time and it's all kind of weird and gnarly and I've never known what to do with it. And so I've been kind of on this kick lately where I cut out the center of these pieces of wood that kind of follow the contours of everything. The center's removed and then I'm filling in that center with a bunch of metal pieces. There's like 60 some metal pieces. And to me, it's kind of like a nature versus computer art type thing because it's got both ends and they kind of play with each other. And I think it's called Veroni. I'm looking at the Veroni pattern where like if you go to the desert and you see the, it's all dried up because it was wet at one time and it dried and you get all these crazy shapes that kind of fit together. Mm-hmm. It's got that pattern in there cut out with metal. All on standoffs that are welded to another piece of metal. So it's a lot of cool shapes that kind of interact with each other. It's coming out really good. I really, really love this piece. But it's been so frustrating because I designed it wrong. And I think this would be a little difficult even for experienced welders, but there's a metal backing and then there's 1-inch standoffs and then all these little metal plates that are welded to those 1-inch standoffs. And once you, the backing plate is 2 or 3 millimeters thick. It's a nice thick sheet metal. The standoffs are I know I'm mixing imperial and metric, but the standoffs are quarter inch rod, and then the top plate that gets on there with all the shapes is 1 millimeter. It's pretty thin, and I chose the 1 millimeter because after I cut the shapes out, I pounded a dimple pattern in there, blacksmith style, heated it up, and did all that, and so they're all kind of curled and they have this amazing shape. And thin metal, first of all, very hard to weld because you weld through it all the time. So once you dial in the settings, it makes it much easier. But some of my welds weren't very good in the middle. Mm-hmm. And when the middle breaks, there's no way to get a welder in there, whether I'm using the laser welder or the MIG welder, no way to get in there. So I'm breaking pieces off and I'm trying to get it back in there. I think it's good enough because it doesn't need to be structurally sound. It just needs to be, it's an art piece, right? But
JB
then
Weld.
When I'm going, what's that?
JB Weld.
I learned a good lesson. So I'm trying, you know, as I'm grinding and polishing and shaping, after it's all welded together, some of the grinding bits will break them off. And I'm like, and there's two different insert sections. The first one was a frustrating one. I learned some lessons for the next one. The next one, I did a little bit better, where I started in the middle and worked my way out and making sure the middle pieces were all good. But if I just would have made the standoffs like a half inch taller, I could have gotten in there a little bit better. Or I chose the thin metal for the top pieces so I could pound it easier. But it turns out it just made it harder for me to weld because I'm very inexperienced and I'm welding through. And anyway, one piece did fall off after we were all done. I got some of that JB Weld putty stuff. It is strong.
Yeah.
That is some pretty impressive stuff. So, and then you can't even see the standoffs. And I realized later, like, I could have cut out the metal pieces and just made little epoxy little wood blocks underneath them. You wouldn't see them. I would have saved myself hours and hours and hours of work. Anyway, good lesson learned. And I was joking with Kelly, like, this art piece, I don't know if I should sell it for $1 or $10,000 because it's been so frustrating. It's taken way longer than I ever expected. I don't know if I hate it or love it more.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. So how are you feeling about the show and like the amount of work you have and what you know?
I am not feeling very good about the amount of pieces I have for the show. I'm happy with the pieces that I do have. I do feel like I'm running out of time. I've got basically just a little bit more than a month, and I haven't done inventory of what I have, but I'm very, very worried that I will not fill the space. I will not meet my own expectations. And it's just like Kelly and everybody around me says, it is what it is. If you only have a couple of pieces, that's what it is. This is your first one. So
yeah,
that part is really bothering me. I grew up not having, in my 20s, I didn't have any money. And it was like a check to check situation. And many times much worse than that. And because of that, I also had very bad credit and I didn't pay phone bills and credit card bills and stuff. And so I did this thing where I wouldn't check the mail or I wouldn't answer the phone because it's always going to be creditors. And it was just, I've just felt better about myself not knowing. So I like not knowing. I need to go in and I need to take inventory of the pieces I do have so I can at least get a better understanding, because I do have to figure out the layout. I have the room layout and I got to figure out where things need to go. And I need to go and take inventory. My plan is to take a photo of something, put all those photos up on a board so I can kind of rearrange things. But I'm avoiding taking inventory because I don't want to know how many pieces I have. And this is how my brain works.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, because I kind of saw that coming. But don't you think that you're assuming the worst there, that there's a possibility that you would take inventory and you'd be like, oh, wait, I'm actually a lot closer than I thought I was going to be. Or,
yeah,
I need this left, you know, or something.
Right. I'm probably assuming the worst. Yeah. But I don't know. I think this is just how it goes being a maker. You're never satisfied. I'm never satisfied. I have high expectations for myself. I know there are people traveling to this thing, so it's like, oh, it in my head, the importance of the whole event kind of builds up more and more. So yeah, is what it is.
Oh yeah, it is. And I'm sure it's going to be great regardless. I mean, honestly, you could have a couple of pieces there and that would be enough for people to get together. It would be enough for you to show off your work. It would be enough for there to be an event around you just having done a few things, but you're going to have more than a few things, I'm sure. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be great.
There's also been there's been a lot of art shows in New York where opening night, everybody leaves with a thing the artist made. So if you were to make, that might also satisfy that feeling lack of pieces.
So if just make like 200 more things. That's all.
No, like a simple like laser cut something or whatever. It might be just something you could make several of, but that has an interesting concept. Really, the concept's more stronger than how you do it, I think.
There is something that I want people to be able to take away. I have two different ideas, and I never thought of that as being the thing of like, oh, I came all this way, I didn't see anything, but maybe that actually helps me think, oh, it's better if they walk away with something. So there's two.
Oh, was this stupid t-shirt? You can have a bunch
that's
of those.
Amazing. I actually, when I was a kid, I got a shirt from my grandma that said, my grandma went to Florida, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Nice.
So you go to these art shows and things are expensive. People put a lot of time and there's a lot of value because it meant something to that artist. So there are going to be things that are expensive, right? And I'm trying to work on this, one large piece. The show is called Unsubscribe. And so I'm making a 4-foot by 8-foot board that says, Unsubscribe. I have the concept, but I don't have the details worked out yet. And the sheet of plywood somehow is going to say unsubscribe. And then it's going to be divided into 200 sections. Mm. And each section is going to be also say unsubscribe altogether. But you can pull off that piece and it still says unsubscribe in the background. Does that make sense so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, these pieces, so the way the gallery works is if you buy a piece, you don't take that home with you because it needs to remain at the show for both dates. And so if you're traveling, your piece is going to be shipped to you later. If you're in town, we can arrange a pickup. But you don't walk away with that piece. But this one, you can walk away with it. And the pieces coming off to reveal the backside is kind of like part of the evolving art of the thing. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be able to get this piece for fairly cheap. I'm thinking $100. I'm not real sure on that yet. And you can walk away with that. So that's one thing. And then another thing that I might do is some sort of like relief print. And I didn't know if I wanted to make it kind of like interactive where you can go and make your own relief print or I can print it for you while there. I'm not sure if I want to be doing more things while I'm there, but there's going to be something. There's definitely going to be something you can walk away with.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be great, man. I have no doubt.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see. For me, this week, I've been doing insulation and drywall. Insulation and drywall.
Pool house?
Yeah. So I actually got started on it Monday. I wasn't able to really do anything. And then just scheduling stuff. And then yesterday I started in the morning and got all the insulation done by lunchtime. And we had to go get drywall and got all the drywall done by probably 9 o'clock at night. And I say all of it. It's like half of the space. It's not the entire, you know, all the walls. It's the half that's going to get drywalled. So, I got all the sheets put up on the wall and today I have to go start adding mud and stuff and then start working on the insulation for the ceiling. And so the plan is to insulate the ceiling and then put up tongue and groove on the ceiling like I did for the outside part to match that for those slanted ceilings. And so I'm going to do tongue and groove up about 3/4 of it, and then climbing wall surface for the rest of the ceiling, the high parts. So theoretically, I'll be able to, once I get the climbing wall in, I can climb up one wall across the ceiling and down the other wall. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Nice.
But it's been a long time since I've had to lift sheets of plywood. I mean, sheets of drywall. And my shoulders really hurt. And I only got 8 sheets.
As I say, doing construction like that, like I was working yesterday in the graveyard house, you work out muscles that don't get a lot of work unless you do that for a living. You don't even know what's getting worked out until it's 2 days later.
Yeah. It was weird. Like I had a lot of this right here, like my forearm, but not just like the big muscle, whatever this forearm muscle is, but like even on the backside, just a lot of picking up sheets with my, you know, like clamping them and moving them and a lot of this. So there's all sorts of weird pains around here that I'm not used to having. But
related but unrelated, moving sheets of plywood, I've got one of those little grabbers. It sticks to the top of the plywood and then it pinches and then you can carry it. It's still heavy and it's still a lot of work. I saw something on Instagram a few weeks ago. Somebody made a wheel. And it's got a little clamp on there, and he just clamps it on the front of the plywood, and then in the back you can kind of steer it into move it around. I'm like, I need to make that.
Yeah, I made a project. I had a video about making one of those. Probably 5 years ago or something like that. And it had a little. I mean, it was his. I saw that same one. His was much simpler and is the way to do it. Mine is not the way to do it. But I'm just making the point that I made one that was overly complicated, but it had a little cam in it, so you could like set the piece in it and then back it up a little bit and the cam would turn and kind of grab it just enough. And so mine was made to put in the center of it. So then you could kind of steer the whole thing, but his is probably more useful. So anyway, but yeah, I manhandled and they were 1/2-inch sheets of drywall, you know, which is like the lightest of the drywalls for sure. But it was still, It was a lot. So my shoulders and my forearms and everything. And I'm sticking with the trying to do it all myself thing on this. And so getting those top sheets all the way up to the ceiling and holding them in place to screw them in place, you know, that's a different set of muscles. Anyway.
How are you doing that? What's your technique for that?
I pick them up and then climb a ladder holding them. And and then push them against the wall with one hand and grab the bottom of it with the other hand and then grab the...
You got to like put temporary cleats on the wall so when you get it in place, it's where it's supposed to live and then you screw it, then you take out the cleats.
Yeah, that's too much.
I've done this before, but just use a 2x4 that's the perfect length and wedge it up in there. And so it's like I think I made a little T and then wedged it up in there and then I can get up on the ladder and screw that in.
And a lot of people will start at the bottom, right? Because then once you put one on the ground, you put that, then the top of that piece is the ledge for the next one. And that makes sense. I'm leaving a little 1/2-inch gap around the bottom. And I could have put a spacer or something, but I just ended up... The top of the panels had a big angle on it because of the way the roof is. And so I was cutting that piece first to try to get the angle right and stuff. And I just... Yeah, I decided ahead of time to do it the hard way, but it was on purpose.
But I got a tip. I don't do drywall much. I'm probably going to end up doing it a little bit at the graveyard house eventually, unless I hire somebody. But I learned years ago from a guy, the way he did drywall is you put it on long ways. So you put all the long ones up and all the long ones down, and you leave, if there's like a 1-inch gap between them, you keep that at 4 feet from the ground all the way across the whole room. You fill that strip in last. You do all the up and all the down, and then you fill that strip in the middle. This way, it's all perfectly, no ladder to spackle all the long run. So you could do that whole long run around the whole room. It's like basically chest height, and you could spackle. So you're spending most of your time there. You're doing the gaps in between, well, the seams in between that are vertical. But the long horizontal line is at chest height right around the whole room. So you're not up on a ladder trying to do that 1 foot from the ceiling if that's where your gap is.
Yeah,
so that's smart. I always thought that was a clever trick.
Yeah. And that was kind of, I mean, I didn't think about it the same way, but I started at the top so that I had a full sheet height from the top. You know.
But, that's what he's talking about.
But
then you drop
you
drop the bottom sheet to the floor, and then you fill that gap. Because otherwise, you're doing it at you're on your knees doing
you're
the bottom.
On your knees, yeah. Which, yeah, I'll be there today. Unfortunately, but yeah. So that's I made a lot of progress on that yesterday, and that felt pretty good. You know, the mudding and the sanding is just really time consuming and messy. So I'm going to try to dig into that today and make some progress on it. And then probably do the insulation and the roof, the ceiling next. And it's kind of weird because this as a video is not really going to be finishing anything. I tend to like to have a video that at the end of it, something is accomplished, you know, something like that task is done. And I mean, that'll kind of be the case. Like the insulation will be done. The walls will be up. Part of the ceiling will be on, but it's not like all the walls are done, you know,
You won't have the ta-da.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just going to have to figure out how to say this part is done and it leads to this, which is next. You know, I don't know. I haven't really figured that out. I noticed yesterday, because I'm going to be gone so much this summer, I'm taking several trips and they're all spread out by like a week. So I'm gone a week, here a week, gone a week, here a week, gone a week, here, and then back for the rest of the summer. And because of that, I'm trying to front load a whole bunch of work so that I have videos that can be edited while I'm gone, you know, and it's actually working pretty well. But because of that, I noticed yesterday I have this like 3 more week window where I'm trying to cram as much stuff in as I can to get as far ahead before I leave. And I'm not used to doing that. Like I've gotten out of that habit of time crunch and trying to get something, you know, in a gap, trying to finish a thing that's in a time gap. And it's kind of weird. Like I like not being on that hurried schedule like I have been for quite a while now. So it's a little bit weird to be back on that. And I know it's temporary. But I noticed yesterday I was hurrying through the shooting of all of this because I knew that the shooting was slowing down the work, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It was just kind of weird. I had to catch myself and be like, no, I need to make sure that I'm capturing, like the video is the point. The video is the thing that I get to make money from. So I have to make sure that I'm capturing what I need for that to be what it needs to be. But at the same time, it's a lot of the same. It's a lot of manual labor. It's a lot of, you know, putting in screws and then putting on mud and then sanding the mud, putting on more mud. So
is the pool open?
Yeah.
Is it too early? It is open.
No, it's been open for almost a month now. We opened it kind of early because we have a heater.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we haven't been in it a whole lot, but the couple of times that I've been in after going for a run or whatever, it's really nice. And it's kind of weird.
Is anything in the pool house?
No. It's drywall and insulation. Just like stacks of stuff
so
everywhere.
It's not being used yet.
No. Honestly, it won't be used until it's finished. Like until the hangout side is painted and set up, the climbing wall is in, nothing can really go in there until those things are actually in place. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to use it at this point anyway. We're not going to use it for storage or, you know, keeping pool stuff. It's really now kind of turned into a climbing gym room, and the other side of it will have like a day bed and a desk, and there's windows right there that look out into the field. And so it's going to be kind of a hangout climbing place more than storage. We have a couple of garages, so we figured we'll just keep them messy and let this be something that people enjoy being in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of weird. We have a friend of a friend. Her daughter teaches swim lessons, and so she, somehow Jenny talked to her, but basically this teenage girl who teaches swim lessons is coming over and teaching little kids how to swim in our pool. And so that's really cool, and like I'm glad that we're able to give her a place to do that because she has to go to other people's pools and teach. But the reason, like on Monday, I didn't get to do anything because, and I told her ahead of time, I'm going to be working in the backyard. I'm doing all these projects, you know, I'll stay out of your way, but I'm going to be back there. But it was like all day long. She taught lessons from 7:30 in the morning to 8:30 at night, all day long. And they were 30 minute lessons. So just like a parent and a child would walk in, they would, somebody would get in the water, she'd teach them. And then before she finishes, the next one's coming in and they would swap out. And she just like, girl works hard. But because of all that motion back there, I was like, I really don't want to walk through that a bunch of times to like carry drywall and to, you know, be in the way. So I ended up just doing other stuff. But anyway, it's been, I don't know this girl. She seems very on top of like, you know, keeping track of things, and she's building a business, and she's, I don't know, but it's really impressive to see somebody at that age, like building a business that she is doing, and she is working long hours and working hard at it. It's pretty cool. So
nice.
But I'm glad our pool is in use, even if we're not in it a whole lot yet.
Right.
So we had, Jimmy, you said before we started recording, you were talking about something, and I honestly don't remember. Oh, you were talking about the Graveyard House and how it had been a while, and you're muted, but, how it had been a while before you like made any progress on it. And you said something about getting the fire back or getting.
Yeah. Well, how do you find that passion after you've, it's no mystery that I haven't put a video out on the Graveyard House in a while. And that's partly because I just, you get to a point where you're like, you don't know exactly what's next. You don't really know. Even if you do know what's next, you don't know how to do it. So that's why in the fall, I hired an architect to draw up the house, and I told him where and what I wanted. I was going to originally have Ryan do it, but he's dragged his feet so much. He's done tons and tons of drawings and sketch up on the house, and he has countless amounts of options, which I need an architect to just tell me what I should do. And that's why I hired an architect. He's a friend. He's done some work. He actually redrew the barn when the barn became my project alone. He drew the barn, and that's how I was able to finish it. So I said, hey, let's draw up the house. And he's dragging his feet a little bit. He's got a couple of jobs. So I had to get started now that it's spring. He looked around the house and said, you have to finish this floor. You've replaced every floor in the place. Just replace this last section because there's some weird janky woodwork in there that's outdated. And so we ripped the floor out a few weeks ago, and then I'm slowly putting it back. But I was over there yesterday kind of begrudgingly doing, there's so many pockets on the sill plate. I didn't want to have to carve more. So I'm making these metal clips that grab the beams, and I was installing the metal clips, and three of the beams go underneath the foyer of the house. So I had to leave those three. I couldn't pull those out because they're integrated into the exterior wall. And I was like, they're good enough. We'll just put the laser beam on them and I'll level the top of them because they're all bent. And so after putting the clips on, I was like, what is it going to take for me to level the top of these? Am I going to have to go get a power planer? And I was like, so not wanting to do it. I was just like, I just can't believe I got myself in this project. Like, why did I think this was going to be fun? You know, I knew from the beginning it was going to be a long haul. I think I might've even said this video series might even just end before the house is done. I think I might've warned people that just because I knew I was in for a long haul. I'm still going on it though. I'm not giving up. And that's not what this conversation's about. But the conversation is really more about, when I started figuring out how to level the top of these three beams, they're all about an inch too high in some spots because of the way the house settled and the beams have bent. And I was like, how am I going to get an inch off of that? I don't, they're in place. I don't know how I'm going to do it. And I was going to go get a hand plane, a power plane. It was just plain. The basement would have been filled with shavings, which is also kind of a fire hazard because if I hit a spark, the pile of shavings could turn into a situation. So I'm thinking, I have this big giant circular saw. I think it's called the Big Boy. It's got it's a circular saw with a 10-inch blade on it. And I bought that. So I was like, if I can cut, these things are 6 inches wide. I said, I can cut. They're 5x5 actually, because they're the old ones from the original house. The weird size, 5 inches by 5 inches. If I can cut all the way through, then I have 1 inch to cut with a sawzall. And then I'm not creating tons of shavings. I was like, let me give it a try. And then also I got to be conscious. I'm holding a circular saw on a ladder that's 10 inch blade.
At 90 degrees.
Yeah. At 90 degrees, perpendicular to my face. And I have the level line. I have to follow the level line. It's late in the day, so it's, I don't still have the bright sunshine I had. And the, every time I'm like, don't get cut. Don't lose control of the saw. Every muscle in my body's tense, holding this giant circular saw, going through the beam sideways, sawdust in my eyes. I'm standing on the top of a ladder that's in the basement floor. My head's poking through the floor, so I'm like up above it. And I keep moving the ladder so like I could feel like my muscles are like right where they need to be, instead of like if it's too close or if it's too far away, you don't have like the strength. But I started getting into it. I was like, okay, I could do this. Like I did my first cut and I was a little timid and I had the saw only set to about 2 inches. And then I was like, I could do this. And so I set the saw blade to 4 inches. So I'm cutting 4 inches and I'm like, I can't believe the saw is not binding up. This thing is insane. The strength inside the saw. And I worked my way through all of it. And I went back to the house. I got a saw, came back to my shop here and I got the Sawzall and I ran back over and I was able to cut the Sawzall piece. I'll send you guys the, Patreon video. And I got through it and I'm like, okay, I can do this. Because I, as I say all the time, there's always that one thing. There's always one thing where you're like, oh, I'm not, sometimes you don't know it, but there's always that one thing that makes you not want to go to the shop. Mm-hmm. And if you can identify that one thing and get past it,
mm-hmm.
the rest of the job almost seems like it's works itself out. You don't even have to do any mental, physical stuff as, cause it's that strenuous, and in this case, it was leveling the top of those three beams. I was like, oh God, like what's more, rebuilding the entire foyer to rip that out or to level the top of the beams? And I actually contemplated ripping the entire foyer out versus leveling the top of these three beams to the new level line. And it's over. The pain and suffering is over. It's done. So now I'm like,
it's not done. You're on to the next pain and suffering.
That's the- but I got all those clips in place, so I don't have to dig a pocket. All I have to do is cut the beams to the right length, and we just have to hammer them in. Hopefully everything's level. I had a little, as I put the clips in, I had a piece of slice of the floor joist, and so I leveled it to the top of that slice everywhere. So now all I have to do is me and Mike have to just cut the length, hammer them in. If we have to adjust them, we could chisel a little bit off the bottom of the beam or add in a spacer to raise it up or lower it, because they're all sawmill beams, so they're all a little different, very slightly, and they all dry differently, so they have different parts of the tree. So yeah. So finding the passion and then finding out why the passion is gone, it's because there's that one thing. And mm-hmm. in this case, I mean, it wasn't this level holding up the whole project. Honestly, it's just overwhelming thinking like, I got the oil burner guy asking me when the house is going to be ready. I got the young man and his father are going to help me with the in radiant floor heating. They're asking me when am I ready for them. I'm like, I don't know. Mm. Leave me alone.
And that's an interesting thing, what you said about the one thing, because I wrote down, what is the one thing that's in my way when I'm thinking about the Gia, very similar situation, where it's just like an overwhelming amount of work. And I'm not really sure what that one thing is or the next one thing that has, that makes me not want to go out there and make progress. But I feel that when you said that, I totally feel that, like when I think about going out there and working on it, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, there's a something in the mud somewhere that you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
For me, when it comes to cars, old cars, it's wiring. Like wiring is enough to make me want to go and spend $10,000 more on a car, because I know that I don't have to do the wiring. And then when I think of your Gia, I know it's completely stripped down. When I see a car on a rotisserie, I'm just like, wow. That person's got time, because it takes enough to restore a car that you don't dismantle that much.
Yeah.
But, and so that's what I'm into with the house. My house is on a rotisserie right now. There's no wiring in it. It really is. And that is a very, very daunting, overwhelming task, but I'm slowly working my way through it. And then now the next thing is, I never hired a dumpster or anything. In the very beginning, I was hiring my friend to take all the work away, but he's now onto something else. So I have so much debris in the backyard. If anybody in the Greene County area has a carting business, they want the debris in my backyard. The job to remove the debris, reach out to me. I give you the gig to get rid of the debris in the backyard. I could just open the phone book, but I've asked around, is there anybody that we know that can grab it if anybody we know wants the business? So I have probably 3 40-yard dumpsters worth of stuff just piled in the backyard. It's on like 200 acres is my neighbor's yard. So he doesn't care. No one's looking. It just blends into the landscape. If there was a house right next to me and I was in like a suburban place, this house would be condemned, but it's just another abandoned farmhouse in the landscape of upstate New York. And there's a lot of them, but it is this floor project. Mike just texted me while working. He says he's off today. So we're probably going to go over there, put a couple hours in. I'll have several more of the floor joists put in. But that's the problem, is finding that spark again. And I know I can find it in the graveyard house. Like I said, that doing those three beams was a big leap last night, because I didn't expect to do it. I figured me and Mike would be in there with chisels and hand planes. Oh, by the way, after I did my first circular saw cut, then the saw blade with the sawzall, then a small hand plane, and I was able to level it all to the laser line and get it all chooched in. It's not 100% perfect, but it's flat across all three beams. I'll send you guys pictures. But on to the next step. Makes room,
David,
for the next
step
with a clear head.
Yeah. David, do you have anything like that that you're stuck on or have been stuck on and you have trying to figure out how to get the motivation back for it?
Yeah, there's the big cookie project. There's like this 4 foot tall cookie. It broke and I haven't made progress on it. And I find myself, I think I'm always looking for an excuse to stop. And if I stop, it takes me a long time to get back into it. When I was working on that slab piece that I was talking about earlier in the podcast, they kept breaking, bad craftsmanship, and I was getting very frustrated. I'm talking to myself, I'm yelling at the piece, and I really should be taking a break, but I know if I take a break, it's going to be really, really hard for me to get back into it. I have to just plow through it. Maybe for safety reasons, I should take a break, but I'm looking for barriers and I'm looking for excuses, and then I didn't want to stop. So I made it through and it turned out great. This other project, the big cookie one, the whole thing broke in half while hammering the brass. And I immediately started to fix it. And then it breaking turned out to be a good thing, because I'm doing the butterflies, and there are custom butterflies that look like stitches. And so now it's way, and using a contrasting wood, and it's way more cool. But these stitches are kind of complicated, and I was cutting them out on the CNC using a 1/8 inch bit. The bit broke. Don't have a spare bit. Had to order a new one. So the project got put on hold. I ordered a new bit right away, and it's still in the packaging. And so, the fix also needed a lot of epoxy. And on the bottom side, there's foil tape and epoxy that just all needs to be like ground down so I can get back and do it. And so last night I decided right before bed, I'm going to get all the tools out that I need to get to the next step. So when I go into the shop after the podcast, everything is right there. The cookie is on the bench. There's no more barriers. There's no more excuses. So I am ready to go. And I think that was the thing that first I need a deadline, and I do have a deadline that always helps. And then just removing all those little barriers that, yeah, keeping me from doing it. That's all set out, ready for me to go. So I've got no more excuses.
One thing that helps me is thinking of the project in small bites instead of thinking of the whole thing. Like the other day I worked on the go-kart, and that's another overwhelming project that I've taken on, because I'm trying to do it the right way. I'm not rushing. Like in the past, it's always kind of a novelty project where I just zip through it and weld things together and not care about it. This, I'm trying to take a little bit more care and trying to do a little bit more engineering. Because I'm building the whole drivetrain, everything, literally from just metal, just from scrap and stock. And the front end bits, I say, let me just focus on machining these parts. And then once those parts are done, let me just focus on welding them on. Instead of, the long-term goal is always in your unconscious mind, but the short-term goals are really, you see a clear ending. By the end of the day, this part's going to be done. And then once that's done, then you could have a clear decision about what's the next short-term goal. And when you start stacking those short-term goals, you start working your way towards the finish. But it's keeping the passion inside those little windows of activity each time, instead of thinking of the overall, like, people are like, how are you going to hate it? What's going to be the windows? I'm like, I don't know yet. I know I have to have a foundation to put all that stuff on. I'm going to focus on this. Where's the kitchen going to be? What kind of stove are you going to get? I'm like, I have an idea, but I'm not going to focus on that till I get the floor under it done. And so that's really the mindset. And obviously, from time to time, you do need to take a step away to help some of the problems marinate and solve themselves in your subconscious mind. You walk away from something with a definite solution, and then a day or two later, you realize that solution was just a means towards the actual better solution. And you do need to give, you do need to let your brain work on these problems to solve subconsciously. You might see something the next day that when you light up the awareness of a problem that needs to be solved, you start to see the solutions in things you wouldn't otherwise pay attention to. A similar parallel is how we talk about a product, and all of a sudden you get the product, obviously on your phone because they're listening and they're mind control, but you also then start to see that product like on the shelf. How could anybody know where to put that product? But when something is in your consciousness, you start to pay attention to it. It comes through the fabric around you. And that's why you need some time to solve some problems. So stepping away is important. And I stepped away all winter from the graveyard. So... I got plenty of problems solved, I think.
That is really good advice. It's, and I think we all know this, but we don't do it. And it's just a matter of like, you just got to do it. You just, it's a mental game. Yeah. You sent a few photos through text a little bit ago, and I'm looking at your level across the beams, and then I'm looking down into the basement, and I see at least three Duresta tags. There's one right on the level with your stencil. There's one on, is that a wall? I'm not sure, next to the electrical box. And then there's a bottle or a spray can of something that says Duresta on there. I love that about you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was actually
as he gets older, he just wants to make sure that he remembers who he is, so he tags things in his own house.
Actually, a good idea. In fact, like, where am I? Who am I? Yep. Yeah, that was when we did the electrical video. The guy Eaton, like, make sure we put your logo on the electrical box. I'm like, okay.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's the new service right next to the old service. It hasn't been completely passed over yet. It's not all completely moved in, but that little box with the open face is going to be eliminated. Patrick is doing all that stuff.
That doesn't look that old.
Oh, you're muted, Jimmy. You're talking, but you're muted.
He ripped everything out of it and he's redoing it. That's why it looks better. Even though it's still temped, it's all temped in.
Oh, but I got you.
He pulled everything out that was in there and he temped it. All those white wires go to all the various lighting around the house. And then the new box, the big long one, is going to be the new service that's slowly taken over. But until we really do like the next step, which would be like putting walls and lights and light switches, that's coming up next.
But cool.
That's
so. Yeah. What about you, Bob?
I mean, it's the Gia. It's just been so repetitive, the metalwork, and I only have a small section left. It's about like this. It's a back quarter panel, you know, kind of around the bumper area. It's maybe a couple of days worth of work, to be honest, I think, but it's just the same thing. I'm just so tired of doing that same thing. And then I know that once I get that same thing done, it's more Bondo. It's more body filler on top of that same thing. And I've already done so much of that. I'm just tired of that. And then I also think, you know, you were saying the one thing. I think the one thing that's actually stopping me from being motivated to do that is the fact that I'm worried the doors aren't going to fit. You know what I mean? Like all of this work and then the doors may not fit in and close all the way. And then that's a whole nother can of worms. Do I undo work? Do I
put them in now?
Well, I mean, they're in and they kind of don't fit. I mean, they kind of do. It's like, it's really close. One of them I think will fit just fine. The other one, it's hard to know exactly what the thing that's causing it not to quite fit. It's just rubbing when it closes. And it's hard to know if that's because of how it's aligned or because of the opening. And, but it's another thing that I just have to spend time figuring out what the problem is so I can figure out what the fix is.
Yeah.
And my worry is that the fix is going to be a really big deal. And so
it's like, go to the doctor, figure it out, get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. So, but those are the two things that I think are just stalling moving forward on it. Because if, imagine I got that metalwork corner done. Imagine I spent a weekend doing body filler over the entire thing. That's probably not enough time, but just imagine it was. That would be done. If I got the doors to fit, then it's ready for primer.
Mm.
Like, that's it for the body, which obviously is only a small percentage of the whole car. But, like, there's not really that much to get the body ready to head towards paint. But it's just those things have been sitting there in my way for so long that now they're just the things that are in the way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta
you reminded me of like a kind of a theory that I have. If, for instance, if you're working on the car and you're afraid the doors won't fit but that's stalling all the progress up to, let's assume the doors do fit. You're going to smooth that curve, fix that door jam, smooth this, paint that, get that all ready. And then the door doesn't fit and you feel like you might have to undo all the work you did. It's not necessarily true because there's probably a couple of key surgical cuts that you would have to cut, separate a little bit, fill in with a weld, and then you're good. So for instance, there's lots of times where I'm like, the go-kart is a perfect example. I'm making the frame. I had to get started. There's so much has to do. I can't just wait and assume the frame is, I'm a little insecure about the size of the frame. Maybe the wheelbase is too short, but I got started and before any of the wiring or any of the steering's in, I could literally just cut the frame in half and add 3 inches to it. I can cut it down the middle and make it wider if I need to. I didn't cut the axle off yet. I have a 4 48-inch piece of steel for the rear axle. It's just stuck through everything. I haven't cut it yet. Because once I know exactly where the frame's going to be, then I'll cut it and then I'll start fastening the wheels to it. So I go forward trying not to let something like that hold the project up, knowing I could make a surgical adjustment later. Another example is I made this cabinet for somebody once and we were already done with it. And then I went on what the architect said and he says it would fit in the elevator. And I went on his measurements and then I realized it won't fit in the elevator. He's thinking we could just tuck it up and in. But now because it's deep and square, it's like the size of a refrigerator. Even the diagonal is too long. It's longer on the diagonal. He thought it would be shorter on the diagonal, sliding it in. So now we had a cut off. And I told this story years ago. This thing's made out of corian. The whole thing's made out of corian. And there's this big empty gap at the bottom. That's just a big piece of corian. I was like, we can just slice right through all that, cut it with a handsaw, cut the whole bottom 18 inches off. Both pieces will fit in the elevator, no problem. Get it to the apartment and then glue it back together in the apartment. It gets installed in the wall anyway. It's going to not move. And so again, just do a search. The whole cabinet's done. It's a beautiful piece. It's in my basement. Has to get in their apartment on the third floor. I just cut 18 inches off the bottom. Got it up there, glued it back together, squirted the corian glue right along the joint, plopped it in, waited 20 minutes for it to cure, palm sanded it in. You can't see it at all. So you could keep moving forward on a project without getting too uptight and then see where it goes.
In general, I would agree.
Adjustment later.
In general, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Specifically with the car, an old car, like every change that I make has to be accounted for or will be, I'll have to pay for it when it comes time to put the piece of trim on it or the carpet on it or the door board on it or
the catch there's so for many the steps, thing.
You know what I mean? Like you can only move so many things and cut back so many things before you're eventually going to have to like pay the piper on, okay, well now how do you get the door to open? how do you hide the gap that you created or how do you, you know, that type of stuff. So And that's not to say that all those things can't be changed in the way that you're talking about, but I'm trying to not, I've already created more work for myself through my early choices, right? And so I'm trying to not continue that trend to make the next stages that I haven't even considered yet more painful and take longer and have this same, like, you know, kind of thing.
Where are you at mentally with the project? Are you working on it because you want to, or are you working on it because you think you need to?
Well, I'm not working on it, so there's that. But I think I'm probably not as interested in the car itself as I was early on. Like, I don't know that I actually want to have the car at the moment. Mm. I think that'll change once I get further into it. But I'm not motivated by, you know, I look at it and I'm like, oh man, I can't wait for this thing to be on the road. I don't get that feeling for it at all. And I, part of that is just the amount of work that is left to do on it. Part of it is when I look at other cars and I think how much I would really enjoy having that on the road or doing that, but I know that I would be in the same situation. So imagine I got a 280Z like I would like to have and went through the same process with that car, I know that I would hit the same roadblock. I know that I would hit the same, like, yeah, I don't really, the amount of work to get this thing driving, I don't really know if it's worth the thing. So I don't think it's the car. I think it's just the state of the, you know, this point in the process. But to answer your question, currently, I'm not that motivated to have the car.
I saw online on Facebook, did I mention this to you? Maybe I talked to you before. We got online a couple of days ago. I saw a full-on Ghia convertible that's been sitting in a garage for 30 years or something. It was like $3,000 or $4,000. Needed work, hasn't run. And I was like, oh, that would be cool. Just get it running.
Yeah.
Mail it to Bob. There you go.
Well, that's part of another thing about this whole thing for the car. This is a separate topic, but like I started in a worse place than I should have. For the amount of money that I put into it. I didn't pay very much for the car, but I could have looked around more and paid the same amount of money for something way further along.
Yeah. Dealing with a car that rusts, it's like the old, that's for like a teenager. And like, I'll still see if it's a car that's like, I have to have it. I don't care if it's rusty, but there's that little voice in me that's like, you're too old to be on your hands and knees for rust.
Yeah.
Get a car. Like when I went out to Grass Monkey Garage, I fell in love with this 49 Cadillac. Had no rust. All I'd have to do is the mechanics and it's like nuts and bolts and a little bit of cosmetics. No rust. No welding in quarter panels. No door corners. No nothing. Like that is. Yeah. It's just dealing with the mechanics and the paint and the cosmetics. That is it. But replacing full panels of rust, it's like, that's a young man's job.
Well, and even like with the green Land Cruiser, if I do restore that, which I am not convinced that I'm going to, but if I do, I'm buying a new body from China. I'm going to have it shipped here. You can buy it. Like, it's crated and the entire thing shows up and you just like lift it onto the frame.
Yep.
I will 100% do that because why not? You know, for the amount of man hours it would take to replace panels.
They're only like $4,000 or $5,000.
I mean,
relatively speaking, it's a lot of money. But when you think about all the time you put into the gear and doing that again, especially when you're not motivated or it's not exciting to you, some people love it. I mean, I hate doing that.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at with that. But I don't know. You guys got any other thoughts on this or anything else?
No. Just got to find that spark.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need a break from the thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters who are awesome. Huge thanks to everybody over there that helps support the show, but especially your top supporters. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Jim at Wiser Bees, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Lone Design, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, the new Janky Workshop, Tinia Space Industries, and Works by Solo. We are really grateful for all of you all, everybody at every level, and we really appreciate the support. Everybody gets the after show, which is a separate podcast after this one. You only get it through Patreon, so go to patreon.com/makingit and sign up at any level, and you can get the after show, which is in audio or video, by the way. so is the main show, but just letting you know. Yeah. You guys got anything to recommend today?
Oh, I'm going through my history trying to find something.
I came across this video the other day. It's called The Lost Art of Looking, A Skill We Stopped Teaching. And I thought it was a beautifully well done video. And this guy, he's basically he draws things. He goes out and looks at something and draws it and kind of talks about how if you can take a photo of a tree easily, but if you draw it, you're really looking at it and you're really studying it. And it's, I think the greater story with the video is slowing down and just observing things.
Cool.
I found something that I've been watching a lot of. It's called, I mentioned Audit the Audit, which is a very popular channel about police interactions. And it's got a great voiceover artist. And it sounds almost like AI. It really makes the videos professional, but he's a real guy. I actually researched it to see if I was listening to AI, but it's a real person who does, I don't know his name, but the same production company is making a channel now called Audit the Court, where they take clips from court and they do a very researched once over of what you're listening to and why it's wrong or what's right or wrong about it. And you guys know that I'm into legal stuff quite a bit. It's kind of like my side passion is learning about the law. Even Rachel's like, you should go to law school. I'm like, nah, I don't have the time for that. I got a lot of things to make. And do you guys ever see the clip of the kid where the mother's like, what are you doing today? He's like, I'm picking up sticks. Got to pick up sticks. I got to get the mail. And when, every day now, Rachel's like, what are you doing today? I said, I got to pick up sticks. It's basically, like, I got a lot of things to do.
Got a lot of things to do.
Yeah, I got to pick up sticks. I got to go around. I got to get the mail. And like, so that's my thing. So besides picking up sticks, I like to listen to a lot of legalese and Audit the Court. Audit. I can't say that without my Long Island accent coming
audit
completely.
Court.
Audit the Court. Audit the Court. Same as Audit the Audit. It's the same producers, same voiceover. That's it.
Cool. I don't have anything related to anything that we do, but I have two videos that I randomly came across. One is, I don't know exactly what the title of the video is, but it's, have you ever heard the classical song Hungarian Rhapsody? I'm sure you have, whether you know that name or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So, Tom and Jerry cartoon way back in the day, there was an episode of that where the cat was playing Hungarian Rhapsody on the piano and the mouse is running around inside the piano and messing up the song and all this stuff. So there's this video of this lady, and I don't know who she is, but she is incredible at the piano. She watches the video of this episode. They show the video on screen and she plays the song, but then also plays all the parts where the mouse is messing up the piano and it changes. So she's playing all of the music from the
cartoon. I remember
cartoon.
Watching that.
It's got like 68 million views or something crazy, but it's incredible. I mean, just watching her react, obviously she's practiced it a lot, but she's, you know, playing with the video and everything. It's crazy. The other one is, do you like Stevie Ray Vaughan at all?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So the Jimi Hendrix song Voodoo Child is probably my favorite song of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely in the top three.
It's understandable.
And so I found this video of randomly of Stevie Ray Vaughan playing it, which I know he's played it before, but it's a live 11-minute long version of him playing that song. And I was showing it to one of my kids who's learning guitar just as a, you want to see something crazy? Check this out. And we watched,
yeah, right.
We didn't even finish it because it's so long, but he just, another level of...
He's amazing.
Of live performance and being able to handle an instrument in a way that's just almost inhuman. It's crazy. Anyway.
I do deep dives on Stevie Ray Vaughan often. And
yeah.
It's like Rachel being like, she's like, oh, Stevie Ray Vaughan again or Chicago. Like, I do deep dives on both of them all the time. Those are like the two YouTube people that I constantly watch.
And there was a Chicago video that we watched in that same little time, 25 or 6 or 4.
Yeah, when he's playing live on stage with the blue shirt on. It's insane.
Yeah. Just wild. Yeah. So
that
good.
Video is just bonkers.
Yeah, so go check those out. Yeah. You guys got anything else?
That's it. I'll tell the parking attendant story in the after show.
Great.
That's the clip that Justin maybe posted and that I posted about this angry parking attendant we interacted with.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Appreciate you.
See you.